All right, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, Ryan Yu from Santa Barbara.
Yes, yes. Ryan, alcoholic. All right, man. Well, I'm glad to be here. I want to thank Stan for asking me to come up. It's good to see him too. It's been a while. Yeah, Jacob, thanks for coming up too, man. I have a sobriety date. It's October 29th, 2011. I have a home group. It's the Thursday night. We are like men who have lost their legs, meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Santa Barbara. Right on. And I have a sponsor. His name is Jim L. And I have a lot of respect and appreciation for him. Really glad to be here. Really glad to be here. Safe and sound, man. Safe and sound in the day. So, life is good today. My life is very, very good today. It's full. I have a host of friends. I have, I'm busy most of the time. I'm busy in and out of the program, and I'm happy most of the time. I truly, truly am, and that was not the case when I got here. It was not okay for a long time, you know? And through my experience, you know, of what I just said and the collective experience, you know, of guys around me, if I do the work, I get the results. Despite my background, despite what I've been through, despite where I come from, it absolutely works, and I'm a firm believer in that. But it only worked for me when I started taking the action that I heard about forever and that I wanted to do, that I thought about doing. You know, I really, really wanted to do it, and sometimes I do it kind of half-assed, you know, and not really in it. And, you know, that's what we call half measures, like a lot of you guys know, and I didn't stick around. And there's no way to beat around the bush. Like, when I started doing the work, I started to get the results. So despite what I say here tonight, or what I think or I feel, the bottom line is it absolutely works, you know, if we do the work. And that's been my experience and many around me. So despite what I say, that has to be known, you know, but it's if I do it. So anyway, yeah, really glad to be here. Part of me wants to say you guys know, you know, but that doesn't really suffice. Got into it, fairly young. I mean, growing up, it was me and my brother and my dad. My mother, my mother has this thing as well. So from a young age, I was familiar with what drugs and alcohol can do to a person and the people around them. And that most certainly does not make me an alcoholic, you know, whatsoever. But I was kind of aware of, and I would see things, and so it was very apparent later on when I started to fall into this deal what was going on, and I was able to recognize it really quickly after seeing it, you know, with my mother and that kind of side of the family. So I grew up in Ventura, Oxnard area, wasn't a horrible upbringing, you know. My dad pretty much raised my brother and I, did the best he could, you know. Didn't really feel too different, you know, not really too detached, you know, which I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, through that feeling of being alone. You know, I mean, I had friends and I fit in, and it was seemingly it was okay for a while, you know. Played sports when I was younger, you know, my brother and I did. And, stuff was going okay. Stuff was going all right, you know. And then, right around about 15 years old, slowly started to kind of fall into the scene. Starting to fall into the scene and started hanging out kind of with the people that, I don't know why, but I gravitated towards them, you know. And started getting into, you know, smoking weed and, you know, really innocent in the beginning, just dabbling fun, you know, probably like a lot of us. But, shortly after that, I found alcohol, you know. I remember my first drink was, an MGD can or something. I took a sip and put it down, and I'm like, I don't get it. Didn't really dig the taste. And that was that. That was the first sip. And then the first time, I got drunk, blackout, right off the bat, blackout. I was at a party and kind of a sign of things to come, there was a keg there, and we had a bunch of cases of beer and whatnot. And I was stuffing fucking beers in all my pockets, in all of them, you know? And I'm like, I might be 16, you know? And I'm sitting at a lawn chair in the middle of this living room. It's just all fucking grim, you know? And I remember watching everyone going around me, having fun and partying and stuff, and I was just silent. I was just sitting there silent with my beers in my pockets and my beers on the ground, and I would get all defensive. There were a couple of people that asked me for them. I said, these are mine, man. These are mine. You can go find your own. You know, and I didn't really have an experience and know what was going on. This is all in hindsight. So looking back at it, that was pretty gnarly. So, you know, woke up with a pile of yak next to my face in the lawn and blamed it on this big dude right next to me who passed out too probably at the same time. I don't know. So that was it. That was it. And as much as I could, as often as I could after that, including right into the next day. I remember I had plans the next day, and there was no way I was going to do it. Wanted to drink, and it was right off the bat. So it was on, and started drinking. School, you know, gone. I mean, I would take the bus to the school and get right on the city bus and just gone, and then it lasted for a short period of time, and I just stopped going. It was not a priority anymore. Hanging out with the dudes and the chicks and smoking the weed and drinking the liquor was the thing. And then it got right into, drugs are a huge part of my story too. They really, really are. And I think that's the case for most of us here, you know? And I have no problem sharing about that because, again, that's my experience. That's another thing I wanted to say. Everything that I say is just my experience. And that's one thing that I find is so amazingly special about this program, you know, is I want to hear someone's experience. I want to hear what someone's been through and maybe some suggestions based off of that because there's no real beating around the bush or room for opinions and all of that. You know, that's the only thing that I can offer to guys that I work with, you know, is this is what happened to me, man. This is honestly what happened to me. This is what I did, and these are the fucking results. This is what's going on now. So there's no real wiggle room, and I respect that, and I get that, and I appreciate that. You know, when sponsoring or being sponsored. So anyway, I wanna hear the experience. I wanna know what happened to you, and I wanna know what you did, and I wanna know how it is now. So anyway, this is all my experience. So I got into the drugs really hard right off the bat too, and just swallowed me. So, you know, young guy, you know, kind of one of the smaller of the crowd, and kind of had my own little group, and then a lot of the older dudes kind of took me under their wing as well, and just started hanging with the gnarly crowd. You know, right off the bat. And that kind of took me wherever. All up and down the West Coast, and just blowing in the wind. You know, 16 years old, just having no idea what's going on. You know, and it's risky, it's ridiculous situations that we get into. You know, in the drinking and in the drug world. You know, I was lucky to make it out of a lot of them because, you know, just not fun. So that progressed. blackout drinker from the get-go, right from the get-go. You know, and I'm glad I don't remember a lot of the stuff that happened in blackouts because the stuff that I do remember was pretty shameful, pretty embarrassing, you know, pretty just, you know, pitiful, you know, so I'm glad I don't remember a lot of that stuff. Drank for, you know, this good couple years, and then, met her, came back down to Ventura, and, met this girl and, ran around for a while and she ended up getting pregnant. So she ended up getting pregnant. I was 17 and I think she was maybe 18 and we had a kid. Now throughout that process of her getting pregnant, you know, there was, I was just still doing what I did. Wanting to do something else but having zero control, you know. I was going to drink, friends, family, loved ones, kid, I love you, I gotta go, I gotta drink, you know. And that's the cunning, baffling part of it. You gotta be kidding. Despite anything, I have to drink, you know. So I had nothing going on. I decided to join the Army. So I went through that whole process while she was pregnant. And April 4th, 2004, had my little girl, Sage. And, 5 days later, I was off to Fort Knox, off to the Army. And so started that whole journey, you know. It was quite the experience. So that was the only thing I had in mind. There was no way I was going to piece a life together. There was no way I was going to get some normal job, try and hold a normal job, try and get a little place or something like that. It was a pipe dream. There was no way. There was no way it was going to happen. So the only thing I can think of is to join something like that. So that's what I did, and off I went. So, couldn't really drink for a while there, you know, basic training and all that. And as soon as I got to Maryland for the advanced training, it was on. We get a couple days, you know, a week to go out, and right to the bottle, no question about it, right to the bottle. And you know, there's some times I'm just glad I made it back to post. You know, there were days I did not want to go back. I just wanted to stay wherever I was staying and just continue to drink. And you know, I was able to get through that. So that was that. And then after that, I went to went over to Italy. I was over in sent me over to Europe. So that's when it got a little strange. So I was 18 years old. You know, it's like the law of the land over there. My first landed in Rhein-Main Airport in Germany on our way to Italy. And I remember a guy there that I met briefly said, you know, it's the law of the land, right? What do you mean? Because you can drink here at 18. To the bar. Went straight to the bar, no questions asked. You know, started with some pitchers. Having fun, and started just taking shots. And last thing I remember is we're drinking everything, and then I took a fucking shot of Jim Beam, man, and lined up a shot of Jim Beam, and for some reason just almost made it to the door, threw up everywhere. So then, you know, got it. You know, left the yak all over the clear door. And got out and took a little walk around the building. I just came back in, so fucking ashamed, you know. Came back in, and the bartender's like, you know, no more liquor for you. And I'm just like, excuse me, Budweiser, man. You know, like, just all ashamed, but I'm just glad she let me keep drinking. So, anyway, last thing I remember was just, you know, chugging Steins with a couple of German guys and singing some bullshit. And then blacked out, and I almost missed the plane the next day. And, like, I guess I was... Just every 10 steps was falling on my face. This kid told me the next day, all the way to the little barrack we were staying at, I was tore up, completely beat up the next day with bruised ribs, and it was gnarly. It was only like 150 yards, man. So, you know, get hit by a train, you know. So anyway, then, you know, I then went to Italy, you know, and then I was squared away for a little while. Bullshit. I blacked out my first night on post. I got there, and the price of alcohol was extremely cheap. It was extremely cheap, and I have a vague recollection my first night of stumbling around post, first day there, and that was just kind of my intro to it, and it didn't really change much. So I started getting little, you know, getting in trouble for little things, you know, not one big thing or, you know, anything like that in particular, but, you know, showing up late to formation because, you know, I didn't set an alarm or slept right through it, you know, or just little discrepancies. It really, really kind of started to add up, and it brought attention to myself, you know. And the thing is, that's all we did is drink. But, of course, you know, I overshot the mark, you know. That's all we did, you know. Pause. So, there were some good times. There were some good times drinking over there. Here's a funny story. So I had a good buddy. His name's Mike. Good old Mike. Now I'm convinced, later on, looking back, absolutely convinced my higher power, my personal higher power, put this guy in my life absolutely for a reason, to kind of crack a door towards, you know, whatever's bigger than us, whatever's bigger than me. So Mike didn't really drink much. He really didn't. But he put up with me, and he hung in there. But we were road dogs. We did everything together. So one night, he says, Ryan, I want to get drunk tonight, man. Just, you know, I want to catch a buzz. He's drunk as a bottle of, like, some nice wine or some shit, you know. So, yeah, have fun. I'll be the DD. Tonight's your night, Mike. Tonight is your one night. Have fun. So he drinks his wine. He gets a little tipsy, you know, whatever. So he drinks his wine, and we decide to go to a little city called Padova, and they had a bowling alley there, a big double-decker bowling alley, bless you. And So we get to the bowling alley, and no thought of drinking, nothing, right? I'm the DD. One night, man, just one night, just let him have his fun. He's dealt with me this long. So, you know, we're bowling, and I think, you know, I'm going to have one Jack and Coke, right? Just one, I'm going to have one Jack and Coke, you know? No big deal. So sure enough, you guys know the story, man. End up, you know, one leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And last thing I remember was shooting pool, and just, that was just off, man. If I looked at my shot playing pool, that should have been a sign I should have not do what I was about to do. So, you know, we end up leaving. And I'm driving, of course. So we're out in the middle of nowhere, right? I mean, this place, it's in the middle of nowhere. There's darkness everywhere, and I'm going about, I don't know, 80 miles an hour or something like that. You know, it's kind of starting to sprinkle a little bit, rain a little bit, you know. I'm probably going 80, 85 miles an hour, and him and his girlfriend are sitting in the back getting all smooshy, and I'm all drunk and grim. And I don't know where comes this traffic circle. I'm 80 miles an hour. I don't know where comes this traffic circle, and I just, boom, full speed, launch the car up in the air, and just slam right in the middle of this traffic circle. We're stuck in like 18 inches of mud. My fucking car is buried up to the frame. And it starts raining. We're in the middle of nowhere. Oh, fuck. This is it, right? And they do not take kindly, you know, to DUIs and things of that nature. So, one night, that's all he asked for. I almost killed him and his girlfriend. You know? One night. So, anyway, I just wanted one drink, you know? Just wanted one drink. I honestly did, you know? And that's that phenomenon right there. The mental obsession to get me to do it and the phenomenon to keep me going. So, End up getting out of that, out of absolutely nowhere, a little Fiat comes who happens to have a tow rope and tows us out of the mud in the middle of nowhere. And I didn't see one other car ever except for that little Fiat. So that was a blessing to be able to get out of that, because that probably would have been the end right there, you know. And, I mean, just another, you know, just another quick story. I was drunk as hell, you know, driving, and I was just at the place that I would get to where this is it, man. This is just the end. I'm done with everything, and I had to be at formation the next day in, you know, a couple hours, and it was done. I knew Austria was like up here somewhere, so I was just gonna keep driving. That was it. And I had a couple bucks, a euro in my pocket, I think, and there was no plan of turning back at all. I was just gonna keep driving, you know, drunk to the bone, and deal with whatever happens. And out of nowhere, I was able to see through my blurry vision a little sign that said the name of my little city that I was staying at. And at last minute, I decided to turn around, but just, you know, the stupid stuff, you know. So, you know, that progressed, and it was good for a while. I had some, you know, I was turned 19 years old in there, and, you know, they had the clubs and all that stuff, and it was fun, but... I ended up getting in a lot of trouble. Long story short, I ended up drinking myself out of the Army. So that was a pretty big deal. I planned on kind of making a career out of it. But being the good alcoholic that I am, I managed to do that. So that was a hell of a process in itself. So that pretty much ended that there, you know. And I came back, and I knew that when I came back to the States, that I had a feeling I was going to get right back into the old stuff, you know. And I knew it, and I knew it, I knew it. You know, as much as I didn't want to, you know. So I ended up coming back. And for a short period of time, I'd get up and, you know, stay programmed and run and stay all focused. And it didn't last long. You know, it was a crazy mushroom trip and a trip to Mexico that ended all that shit. So that got funny. That got funny. So I stuck down there for like a week. And so it was right back into it after that. Then fell, you know, just heavily back into it, you know. Drugs became as equally prevalent in that specific period of time as alcohol, you know. And it just progressed, you know. Got a couple hostage girlfriends, you know, would live with them or try and work as much as I could, you know. And it was just, you know, really, really bad. It was really bad, you know. Alcohol had become my master, most certainly, you know. Never drew a sober breath at all, you know, except for when I was separated, you know, doing the jail thing or doing the this thing or doing the that thing, you know. If only if I was physically separated from it, would I be able to stop. So, continued to run amok, and did that for another couple few more years, you know. And wreckage. Just causing absolute wreckage with everyone around me. I would burn every bridge. I would wreck every car. I would, you know, just live the life of a good old alcoholic, you know. And again, drugs were there a lot, but it started, it ended with alcohol and all throughout. So fast forward to 2007. Living out in Santa Paula. Hadn't slept in maybe 9 months, you know. You know, things are getting a little funny. So I was in an alcohol and drug program, you know, that I would kind of show up at, you know, drunk or high as a kite. I would try and get my body there. I think I made it like twice, to be honest with you. But there was a lady there who's like a counselor. And, you know, she'd want me to open up to her and talk to her about what was going on. You know, there's no way I was going to do it. You know, there's no way that I was going to do it. And I'll kind of get back to that in a little bit. So it was the middle of summer. It was the middle of summer, and things were kind of coming to an end. You know, and I knew it, and I felt it, and stuff had really hit the fan with people around me, and the whole, you know, the whole scene was kind of just coming to an end. And I woke up one morning, I was able to drink myself to sleep with a huge bottle of brandy, which I was very grateful to be able to go to sleep. So I came to the next morning, and I kind of ravaged through my pockets, you know, to see what the hell happened. And I pulled out a wadded up crinkled $5 bill buried at the bottom of my pocket. So my initial thought is, I'm going to be okay. At least till maybe this evening, everything's going to be just fine. Because I knew, you know, I knew the guy at the store, so I can get like 4 24s, you know. So I was special. So I was going to, you know, I had a feeling that everything was going to be okay. Just, you know, maybe till late afternoon. Now my car, my wrecked car, had been parked on the side of this house, on a street off to the side, because I didn't dare keep it out front. So now I had remembered that. The needle had been buried on empty for a very long time, a very, very long time. And I thought, it's like 9 blocks, please God, just get me 9 blocks. Right. That's when I'd pray and stuff like that would happen. I really would just please. I'd shut the eyes. God, please just get me there, man. You know, prayers of desperation, you know? And, so I got in the car, I started the car. And I made it like 3 blocks. 3 blocks, shut down, done. So middle of summer, it's like 100 degrees. Dude, I'm just greasy. I got that nice coat, you know what I mean? And it's like really not doing too good, you know. And I just wanted to get to the store. So I had that $5 bill, you know. And it crosses my mind. You know what? If I put $2 in gas, right? $2 in gas, it'll get me there and back. It'll get me there and back. Okay. So I hoof it. I hoof it. Slice right through the town. Get to 10th Street. And, you know, it's so hot, and I'm just feeling so horrible, and it's just all setting in, you know, this day specifically. So I guess I put $2 in, and I walk all the way back. I leave my little necklace as collateral for one of the little gas cans, and I get back, and I put it in, the fucking car won't start, okay? And the car won't start, and I'm just incrementally getting just defeated, dude, you know? So it was right then, you know, something happened in me. Something happened in me where I recognized, you know what? This is it. This is the end right now, man. This is the end of where I'm at now. You know, to be honest with you, I didn't think it was the end of my drinking and using, for I had another plan that I was going to try that didn't end up working out, which led to this. But so I said, you know what? I walked back, put the $3 in, started the car, and that was it. Went back to the pad I was staying at, grabbed everything, and yelled to whatever they were doing in whatever rooms they were, hey man, see you guys later, you know, you probably won't see me for a while. So I ended up leaving that town, and what happened was I went to my old man's house, and didn't go there much. Now my plan was to get, I have a baby face. So I needed an ID. So, you know, my plan was to get an ID, which I had ordered for a program that I had to enroll in. And so I stopped by my dad's house because that was always a solid address, you know, if I could send stuff. So I get there and, you know, I never really want him to see me or my, you know, my brother, you know, because he went through a little bout too. You know, we don't really like him to see any kind of, you know, weakness or things that are, you know, just everything's going good, good to go. Everything's fine. You know, so went there to get that ID so I could go hide at another little place and try to drink myself to death pretty much and not get caught by, you know, the probation and the whole trip. So got to the house, ID wasn't there, and something happened. He said, you know, how you doing, Ryan? How you doing? And I just completely broke down, and he was completely taken aback. He didn't really know how to react. He just kind of sat back in the chair. He wasn't really sure what to do, you know. And I said, you know, I'm losing my mind. It's done. This is it. You're seeing me right now. This is over. I had a white shirt on. It had like a black oil mark right here. It's a nice shirt you got there. I'm like, you know what, I actually put it on for you, you know, so you think I was doing all right? He's like, yes, this is the nicest shirt I have. So, yeah, you know, and so I told him what was going on. I remember he gave me a $10 bill, and he said, go get some food. I couldn't even stand upright, man. My back was, you know what I mean? I was just a little malnourished. So he said, go down to the Taco Bell. He said, bring me a receipt back, because he knew I was going to buy a bottle. So I went down and got a 7-layer burrito. It took me about an hour to eat that thing, you know, and brought him the receipt back. And I said, what are you going to do? So now, back to what I was saying, my mother, you know, my mother is one of us as well. So she was staying downtown, and me and her have kind of a, you know, dark history with drinking and using and stuff like that. So that was always kind of safe ground, so to speak, because I knew I could go there and do whatever I wanted to do. I could be just twisted in a ball on the ground doing something rather, and she'd just kind of step over me and take a shot, you know. So it was never really a big, thing. So he said, I think you need to get, don't you need to go into detox or something like that? Because again, he wasn't too hip to kind of what, you know, what we're about or what the process is. So I said, yeah, yeah. And then I remember that counselor, the alcohol and drug program. So somehow I ended up getting a hold of her. He took me down to my mother's house where I laid on her floor. And I had my last drink that night in 2007, September 11th, 2007. I had that there. And for 9 days after that, I didn't drink or use anything. And I remember just repeating to myself, like in my head, going, this is so dark. Oh my God, this is so dark. Like kicking everything, feeling everything, the word just so dark, just kept repeating in my head. It was just a nightmare. So I ended up hearing about a detox. And the lady at the program was going to send me, she suggested that I call to Tarzana, you know, down to Tarzana, to that one down there. And you know, at the kind of last minute, because what happened is I went in there and I broke down to her too, man. I said, this is what's going on. Can we shut the door? And I told her everything that was going on. And she suggested that I go to a detox in Santa Barbara. So she said, try not to drink, try not to use until you can get in there. So that stuck. And I did my best. And it took 9 days. It was so hard. I remember a couple days in particular. It was so hard. It took 9 days to get in. To get into the detox. So that's kind of what happened. And you know, the next part, you know, what I'm going to kind of talk about is my experience in this whole new life that has grown up in me and around me. So my plan was to come to detox for 2 weeks, and then battery's low, and then go back home, wherever that was, and get a job, get a place to start a life. I had no idea what I was in for. That was my plan, because I was unaware of the process that it was going to take to change my life and to be able to stay clean and sober. You know, now when I was 16, I was in a sober living out in Oxnard for a short period of time. And I literally, it sounds cheesy, but I heard sponsor and I thought of banners on racetracks. When they said sponsor, I would think like a banner on a fucking racetrack. That's how much I knew. So that was really the only, understanding that I had of this deal. So I had a friend, we had mutual friends, that worked at the detox, and he still works there now. And I kind of told him my grand plan, you know, and he said, Ryan, you know, the minute you leave this place, you're probably going to get loaded, right? You know that, right? And I said, well, what do you mean? I mean, I'm going to go down and I'm going to square it all the way and get a job and get a place and start a life, you know? And he said, that's probably not how it's going to happen. I highly suggest you check in with Sober Living. So so that's what I did. I didn't want to, and that's what I did. And yeah, the leader of the meeting tonight, he actually came to that detox. They have a Saturday meeting at 10:30. And, you know, kind of shared his experience, strength, and hope throughout the meeting. And I knew I needed a sponsor at the time. And I knew that was the thing to do and what I had to do. So I asked him. And he said yes. And, You know, wouldn't you know, the next day, and this blew me away, the next day he came back to the detox and brought me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember thinking, dude, he drove out of his way to come back here to give that to me. And it blew me away that someone would do that and not ask for anything in return. It blew my mind, you know. So he put a little card in there that said, it was my first piece of direction ever that I still have in my little big book. Said, read to page 58. And so I did. So that began the journey, you know, that really began the journey that led to today. So anyway, I checked into the sober living, sick as a dog. All I had were my old habits. Oh my God, you know. I had no idea how to live sober with as any sort of respectable functioning member of society, gentleman, anything like that. You know, but I guess I did the best I could at the time, which was pretty damn poor. So, pause. I suffered miserably in my own hand for years because of my selfish actions. Absolutely. I had a huge God-sized hole in my stomach. And when I say God, higher power, whatever, I know most of you know that. Whatever your God, your higher power, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe may be. Awesome. So, you know. I lost my train of thought there. So I did the best I could at the time. You know, the hole was just so big, I would just consume with this or that or women or gambling or anything in excess, anything I can do to make me feel just okay, man, just for one more day, you know? And there's a part in the promises that talks about, you know, we'll find that we're able to be, you know, at perfect peace and ease, you know. I always, for the longest time, I would have the earbuds in, you know, the headphones or the TV on or the radio or all three at one time because I like to party, you know. And I had to distract myself from me because there was no way I was going to sit there in silent, which I love now. Sit there and fucking have to deal with everything that I had just done catching up with me, you know? And back to the detox, I will never forget, for those 2 weeks, I dwelled on my entire life, laying in that bed, trying to sleep my entire life. It was horrible, everything that I had just done up until that point. So, you know, I would constantly have to have things going, you know, just to shut it off. But, you know, there were little things that were suggested, like, you know, go to meetings, man. So I started going to meetings, you know, and started to meet people, you know, people that were kind of the same mindset at the time, and we really gravitated towards each other, but got plugged in nonetheless. Figured out kind of the routines of meetings, you know, which ones I'd go to. You know, my home group now, I've been going to consistently for close to 7 years now. You know, which I love very, very much. I have learned how to live my life like somewhat of a respectable guy in those rooms, you know. So I started going to meetings. I would take direction. Slowly. I would do the work, you know. And, you know, in hindsight, it wasn't the pace that I was going and the level, the amount of honest effort that I was putting into the work was not even close, man. It was not close enough to counter everything else that was in me and all of the new actions that I was taking, you know. So I've seen it with other guys and I've seen it with myself, and honest to God, the relief that comes from working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my experience and others, will come as quickly as you do it, will come as quickly as you go through the steps. And for the longest time, I remember talking with the leader one night in particular, and saying, so when I write this stuff down, what's going on? Is it the humbling nature of me writing it that's making these changes? Is it a psychological thing that's going on? And he's all, hey, man, you got to stop doing that. You got to do the writing and trust the process. Well, I'm like, all right, man, well, I just want to know that it's going to work, you know? Some shifts are going to occur, right? You know, so I thought myself back into a bottle more than once, you know, questioning the futility of it all and, you know, that whole thing, you know? So I got a little sidetracked there. But anyway, You know, I started slowly but surely to do the things we do around here. You know, started to get plugged in. And, you know, things changed, you know, a little bit, you know, on the inside. Things on the outside were a little slow. You know, there was no cell phones. There was no, you know, there was no licenses. There was none of that shit. I didn't have anything when I got here. There was nothing, you know, except, and I think, again, I remember running it by, running it by Jason. You know, I said, because he would stress, just do the next right thing, man. Because I came here with a whole lot of baggage and a whole lot of that kind of stuff to clear up. And I would think, man, is it going to be worth it? You know, is it going to be worth it? I really hope it pays off because there were just too many mountains to climb. He just said, man, just suit up and show up. So I did through the process of all of it. And all of that stuff, all of those catastrophic things that I had to deal with that most newcomers have to deal with, the courts, the jails, the classes, all that stuff. We got to be scoring every license, child support, the whole trip. All of those mountains, they have been climbed. They're a memory, you know. They're a memory, you know. But at the time, it was so intense and so seemingly impossible. But I would just show up. I would suit up and show up whether I wanted to or not. I'd take get up at 5 in the morning and take a city bus, you know, take the whatever, the Vista down to Ventura and get on the city bus and drive all these rock stars to get to a class and, you know, sit there for 1 hour and do it all the way back and, you know, for a solid year, you know. It's just one little example. It was gnarly, but I did it because I knew it had to be done, you know. So if you're going through that right now, you know, and you think this is just too much, man. You know, I'm too stuck, you know, in the courts and just all that. It's going to be a memory at best. That's just the bottom line. You know, if we keep doing the thing, though, you know, we're never going to get out. But there was a guy in 25 years. He took 25 years, and he said, Ryan, man, he didn't say it to me. It was at a share like this. He said, all of the things over these 25 years that I swore were just the end, were the catastrophic blow. He said, I don't fucking remember them. I don't remember them. You know? And I went, no way. No way. All of these things that we do, all of these men that are so hard to deal with, at best, they're going to be a memory, you know? Which brings me to the whole practical experience thing. Now, all of the stuff that I had to go through, all of the lessons that I had to learn with my relapses and my going back out and me trying to do things my way and me questioning the whole process, that has given me practical experience now that I can help others with, where I could say, dude, I've done that 4 times and it didn't work. Why don't you try this instead? You know? And that's the coolest thing. And again, like, you know, back to what I said at the very beginning, that's all we have, and I think it's just the coolest thing. You know, and it's totally reliable. You know, so I plugged in the best I could. And it was a lack of action, man. It was a lack of action. It was half measures, and it availed me nothing, you know. There's some knowledge that I acquired, you know, most certainly, and the actual application of these tools and these principles in my life that never really left, but, you know, there's a reason I kept going back out and pieced together 9 months, 6 months. Then it started getting shorter, you know. Then it would get like 2.5 months, and I would hear about this revolving door getting stuck. And I remember going, no way, man, it's happening. Then once it was 2 weeks, I lasted 2 weeks, and I went right back out. I went, this is it. Here we go. This is exactly what they were talking about. And that was a dark realization right there, you know, knowing that perhaps I'm not going to make it back, you know. But I kept coming back. I kept coming back, and I have a firm understanding now of why we say keep coming back, and if we're, you know, it works if you work it. I get it. So I kept coming back, kept showing up, kept staying on my alcoholic, you know, like we did tonight. Now this is a starting point. We all have to do it. We all have to do it, you know. You know, what it's like now. Oh, we're getting there, huh? What it's like now. All right, here we go. I swear to God, most of the time, my life is amazing now, on the inside and on the outside. You know, it was not an overnight matter. There are some, very few that I know, that have, you know, that white light experience, you know, where they have that certain thing happen to them where they're just, oh, you know, that's it. You know, they're in it. You know, for most of us, myself included, it was the educational variety. I had to learn what to do and what not to do painstakingly, absolutely painstakingly. But again, I wouldn't change that for anything. So, you know, life is really good today. I'm super active in the program. It's not, you know, there was a period where it was a task to, like, go to a meeting. You know, like, fuck, man, I'd rather be doing this or I'd rather be doing that. absolutely, most of the time, not the case. You know, I love it. It has become the biggest part of my life today. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and the fellowship that has grown up around me, I would not change for the world. Solid, solid guys and gals, brothers, sisters, you know. Constant contact, you know, constant contact throughout any given day, you know. And if you're new and you don't have that yet, and this is all just weird, man, you know, and it doesn't feel right, you're not sure if it's going to work, so why am I even trying anyway, kind of thing, you know, I'm not going to make it, you know, that's bullshit, you know. It's an absolutely normal feeling to have, but it's bullshit. If you plug in and you do the work, you are no exception. I was no exception. The second I started honestly doing the work to the best of my ability, honestly to the best of my ability, that's when it changed, you know. There's no exceptions to this deal, you know, rarely. But host of friends, daughter of my life, love it, just went to Magic Mountain. Me and her, she's gnarly. She turned 11. Went to Magic Mountain and just went on everything. Had a blast, you know. Just peaking in life, you know. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's good, and just job's good, place, and little vehicles, and like, you know, everything's good, all outside shit's fine, it's fine, it's fine, but it's just, it really does not matter, you know, and I've had a firm understanding that it's the inside shit. It's the inside shit that I have to continue to perfect and enlarge, you know, absolutely, you know, because I've gone through periods where it's, you know, where I stop doing what I know to do, kind of fall out of the routine, you know, which I find a lot of comfort in. You know, and it's uncomfortable. It really, really is. And it will continue to be uncomfortable until I, you know, do that writing and write down those resentments, you know, write down those crippling fears, you know, and then talk to someone about it and then turn my attention to someone I can help, because that is my problem, you know, is an extreme amount of self. Sitting there thinking about my life and my big plans and my big, you know, all of these things, and it's horribly uncomfortable. I choose not to. If I can avoid it, never to be stuck in myself, if I can avoid it, you know, but it's natural, it is. But the highlight of my life today is being able to work with others and slowly see them come in and get a little job or get a little place, you know, or start to smile a little bit, you know, and start to kind of look up, you know, and it's really, really, really a cool thing, and it's an honor and a privilege to do this deal. So again, you know, no matter what we think or feel about this thing, you know, the proof is in the pudding. If we do the work, we get the results, you know, whether we want to or not, and there's times we will do anything but that. We can have the big book or our binder sitting at the end of the bed or whatnot, and we'll go chain smoke, and we'll chase him or her. My phone vibrate, was that her? You know what I mean? Or go cruising, you know. You know, we will do everything and anything but the thing that's going to save our lives, man. You know? But, you know, it takes what it takes for all of us. So hopefully that willingness can be mustered to do it before you have to get to that point. You know? So, dude, I'm glad to be here. It works if you work it. I love you guys. Thanks.
Let's thank Ryan again for the presentation. Also like to thank anyone that has a commitment at this meeting. The speaker will be available after the meeting.